Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premiere Networks Sunday, December 16th, 2018. This is episode 1550. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by CuriosityStream, a subscription streaming service that offers over 2,000 documentaries and nonfiction titles from some of the world's best filmmakers, including exclusive originals. Visit CuriosityStream.com/TWiT and use the code TWIT to get 1 month free. And by Brex, the first corporate credit card for startups. Get the card free, and TWIT listeners get Brex card fees waived in perpetuity at Brex.com/TWIT. And by Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. Introducing Rate Shield Approval. If you're in the market to buy a home, Rate Shield Approval locks up your rate for up to 90 days while you shop. It's a real game changer. Learn more and get started at rocketmortgage.com/tech guy. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Yeah, time to talk computers, the internet, home theater. We got your digital photography. We got your smartphones. We got your smart watches. We got all that jazz. That's what we talk about on this show each and every week. My phone number, if you want to ask a question or make a comment, make a suggestion, 8888-ASK-LEO. 888-827-5536. Toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. Outside that area, you can still call. You just have to use Skype and it'll still be free. Skype out to a phone number. 8888-ASK-LEO. Website, techguylabs.com. Everything we talk about on the show ends up on the website, thanks to James DeRuvo writing it all down now. Scribble, 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 James. Puts it all up there, free for all. No sign-up, no entry fee. Just it's there with a good search engine and everything. TechGuyLabs.com. Starting to see blog posts from companies that do encryption, like 1Password, Signal. Signal's blog post. Signal's a encrypted secure messaging service. A lot of people use, people like Edward Snowden use, he recommends it, to have communications that are not hackable or eavesdroppable. Signal's blog post from this week, Setback in the Outback. Australia has passed an interesting bill. I think really the first in the world to pass a bill like this. They call it the Assistance and Access Bill, which requires a company, any company doing business in Australia, to make available upon government request communications that use that company's services, even if a company like Signal is encrypted. Now, Signal is one of the systems a lot of us use because even Signal can't read the messages. They're encrypted what we call end-to-end, from my phone to your phone, and no one in between can read them, just me and the recipient, and especially not the company. End-to-end encryption is exactly what this Australian bill is designed to defeat because it means that the Australians, the law enforcement, the government, can't read those messages either. And Signal, as it's currently designed, the company has no way to give them those messages. Well, now that's against the law in Australia. Signal has been told, as has everybody who does this, now, you know, if we ask, you have to provide, and there are extreme fines if you don't. You have to be able to see these communications and give them to us. Now, I am not against fighting criminals. I'm not against that. That's a good thing. And of course, that's the excuse that the Australian government gives. This was passed in the last minutes of the Australian Parliament before the holiday recess. That's the excuse as well. We got to catch terrorists. So we're going to make sure that they aren't able to communicate privately. Seems fair, right? I wouldn't even be against that in principle, except for one thing. When you put a backdoor in an encrypted product, an end-to-end encrypted product, it's available to all, not just law enforcement. And if a backdoor exists, it's highly likely, we've seen it happen again and again, that it will somehow leak out of government, leak out of law enforcement, leak out of the company, and become available to hackers, which means no more private communications and everything would be hackable. Even more of a concern for a company like 1Password. 1Password makes a password vault that's encrypted. Their blog post, "Does Australia's Access and Assistance Law Impact 1Password?" 1Password says, "We do not introduce backdoors into our products and will continue to operate in a way that would make it difficult for a backdoor to be inserted." They say there's some vagueness. We don't know how it'll be interpreted and used when it goes into effect. We don't like backdoors. We don't like compelled insider attackers. So that's a good news. That actually is not something the law requires. We don't like the notion. By the way, the law also allows law enforcement to put malware into a product like this so that they can do more than just read the encrypted contents. They can, this is really scary, they can then access the phone of the user or the device of the user and spy on them. Whoa, that's not good. It all made a lot of sense if all you say is, well, we want to get terrorists. Yeah, that's fine. It's far, far worse than that. And I imagine what will happen. We'll have to wait and see how this is implemented. I'm hoping it will be overturned either in the courts or the parliament will retract it. But at some point, it could be the case that there are companies that just won't do business in Australia. They'll just move out. And it concerns me because I have an email provider that I really like. I left Gmail about a year ago, Google's email provider, even though it's free and it's very powerful and it's great, because I just didn't want to store my email in the clear, understand, in the clear on Google's servers. It's not, you know, Google can look at it. In fact, they have to in order to do spam filtering, things like that. I didn't want to do that. So I moved it to a company called Fastmail, and I've even recommended them. But there's one little problem. Fastmail is in Australia. So I'll be watching with interest, but at this point it looks like the Australian authorities will be able to put a backdoor in Fastmail in any encryption. Now, the good news is with email, if you really want to, you can encrypt it. You need to know the public key of the person you're sending it to. You have to kind of do some arrangement ahead of time, but you can send encrypted email that even the Australian government can't get into, thanks to the GNU Privacy Guard, an open source project. Oh, but wait. GNU Privacy Guard, even open source projects will be required to provide a backdoor for the Australian government. It's going to be interesting to watch what happens in Australia as companies leave. I mean, we saw this with GDPR. We saw a lot of U.S. newspapers block European readers because they didn't want to have to adhere to the privacy laws of GDPR. Now, I think GDPR was probably a good law. This is not. This is not. And it's something we should be aware of. And the reason I bring it up, not only because I guess at this point it would be prudent not to do business with a company that is in Australia, if you want to stay unhacked, you wouldn't want to use, you know, crypto from Australia. And B, I hope it doesn't spread. Because once Australia does it, that's a good country, right? Must be a good idea. I could see other countries adopting this. Even Turkey and Russia don't have laws this draconian. Russia just bans encryption entirely. They don't put a backdoor in it. Actually, that's a decent alternative. Just you can't buy an encryption product, and you can't buy 1Password in Russia or Turkey or China for that matter. But they don't take the extra step of saying, oh, and we would like a backdoor access, and we'd like to be able to put malware on any machine we want. That's going a little too far. That's going a little too far, and I certainly don't want to see that in the United States. Let me just make this clear. It's a bad idea, not because it makes it easier to catch terrorists, I'm all for that, but because it makes us all less secure. And I hope there's some legislators and listening who hear that message. It makes us all, you too, makes us, by the way, Malcolm Turnbull, the Prime Minister of Australia, uses Signal for encrypted communications. Uh-oh, Malcolm, what are you going to do? It makes us all, yes, you too, less secure. Let's take a little teeny-teeny-weeny time out. I'm going to get the calls going. 888-88-ASK-LEO. Our phone angel is here. Kim Schaffer, she's answering the phones. We will be getting to those calls, your calls, in just a second. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Let me give you the number one more time. I'd love to hear from you. 888-88-ASK-LEO. Give us a ring. We'll talk right after this. He doesn't even know. He doesn't even know. He's never met you, right?
No, not unless he's looking at the camera. I don't know.
Oh, maybe.
But this is now my benchmark. I know it's Sunday.
It's Sunday, and the mighty, mighty phone angel Kim Schaffer is taking your calls. Uh-huh. Hi, Kim.
Good morning.
Good to see you.
You too.
Have you been answering the phones? It's raining out.
It is, which is good, but I want it to rain overnight, and then when I'm on the road, I don't want it raining.
You want it to be like Camelot.
Yeah.
What, once it never rained till after sundown.
Because people don't know how to drive in this.
By 8 a.m. the morning fog had flown. You want it like that.
Yeah, exactly.
In short, there's simply not. Well, it's not Petaluma, that's for sure. So who should I start with? I should probably answer phones instead of singing, I'm thinking. I'm just thinking.
Although, very good voice. Uh-huh. Nice job.
Yeah, no, it's okay. You keep your job. You don't have to lie.
Dan in New Jersey, I think he wants to cut the cord and is looking for a little help as to what equipment to buy.
Dan in NJ.
New Jersey.
All right. Thank you, Kim. Hello, Dan.
You hear me?
I hear
you. You hear me?
Yeah, get over to the phone. Come on over here.
Okay. Let's see. I have a question.
What are you, across the room? Hey, I'm over here.
My headphones.
Oh, headphone. Okay.
I thought I was so smart.
Yeah, you were so smart. You didn't know I'd pick you up. Usually we keep you on hold for an hour or two.
Oh, we're going to have to disconnect, I guess.
That's all right. I can hear you. Go ahead.
Horror, I thought I was so smart.
Yeah.
My Bluetooth off now.
Yeah. Go ahead, talk
you
to
there?
Me. Yes.
Okay, much better.
Much better.
So, Leo.
Yes.
I want to buy an antenna for my TV.
A TV antenna? What is this, the 1950s?
For my HD TV, I want to get that one so that I don't have to... I can cut the cord, let's say.
Yes.
So I went online, and there are all these different shapes. They look like bananas. They look like hoops. They look like... Yeah. And different ratings. And I was just wondering if there was one that might be, one that you could recommend.
Yes. I can't recommend one for any... the reason there's so many different ones is it depends on where you are, how close you are,
right.
How close you are to... Mount Wilson. Oh, you're in New Jersey. You're definitely not close to Mount Wilson. How close you are to the transmitter towers and that kind of thing. So I'm going to recommend two websites. There's one called TV Fool.
Oh, perfect for me.
It's just right for you. TVFool.com. And what it does is it gets you started by telling you where you're aiming that antenna and how close it is. See which TV stations you can get on a map. It's a really great site. TVFool.com. And you'll enter in your address, and it will say, oh, okay, so here's the channels you can get, and this is the key, here's the kind of antenna you're going to need.
Right.
The other site that's also very good for this is antennaweb.org. This was co-sponsored by the Consumer Technology Association and NAB, the National Association of Broadcasters, the TV channels.
Mm-hmm.
And AntennaWeb, actually, right on the front page, 5 reasons why an antenna should be part of your cord-cutting setup. I'll give you one and only one reason. It's the best quality HD you can get, and it's free.
Fantastic.
Yep. Over the air is a really good way to go. So if you're close enough, I don't know where you are in New Jersey, but
I'm like 10 miles from Manhattan.
Perfect. That's close enough. You'll get, I don't know where they put them on, Empire State Building and maybe World Trade Center.
Trade Center. Yeah. Right, exactly.
So they're on big, tall buildings, and you're going to kind of aim the antenna. There's directional antennas. They're called Yagis. Those are the ones that look like bananas. But you're, but I'm not going to tell you because it really does depend on you know, your situation, if there's anything in between and all that stuff. So that you're going to do a little research.
That's okay. I could do it.
Yeah.
At least I know where to start.
Yes.
And I have a follow-up question.
Yes, sir.
I also, for Christmas, I was looking at Raspberry Pi. And not the kind you eat.
I'm a boysenberry guy myself. I know what you're talking about. I love the Raspberry Pi. $35.
Exactly.
It's a full computer.
But you think that would be a simple thing. You would think that would be simple. But then again, are there different different companies that make it?
There are.
Raspberry Pi packages.
Yeah, there are.
Yeah.
So, no, I'm going to simplify it for you. So the Raspberry Pi was created... really, and I've interviewed the creators, and it's really a great story. It was created by a guy who was an educator and wanted to make an inexpensive computer that young people could learn about computers from. And it turned out to be the most successful project ever. He was inspired. He's a Brit, and he was inspired by an inexpensive computer sold by the BBC many moons ago called the BBC Micro. And he said, well, you know, this was great. I learned this way. Maybe others would like to learn this way. So it's about the size of a Altoids tin. In fact, people often put their Raspberry Pis in Altoids tins.
Interesting. That's small.
It's small. It isn't a powerful computer. It's probably even less powerful than your smartphone. But it has a few features that make it very desirable. It's ARM-based. So there is a Microsoft Windows version for it. And usually people use a Linux distro called Raspbian on it. There's lots of additional software. It has a HDMI port, so you can connect it to a TV. It has an Ethernet port, so you can connect it to the Internet. You can buy Wi-Fi hats that go on top of it. It has a general-purpose I.O. pins that make it really easy to program projects. It's really a project computer for most people. Say you wanted to make, I don't know, maybe you wanted to make a painting like Harry Potter where... The painting looks like an oil painting, except every once in a while it winks at you or moves or leaves.
Yeah.
So you could do that with a computer in a video frame in a big standard wooden painting frame. And the computer you'd put behind it would probably be a Raspberry Pi. It's that kind of thing. $35. But you're right. You can't just get a Raspberry Pi. You got to get a kit. You got to get a power supply. You got to get an SD card. You got to get the accessories that go with it. So... It's best to really go to a website that sells project kits. My favorite is Adafruit. Lady Ada is one of the most amazing women I've ever met. She's super, super smart, an engineer. They have a podcast called Meet the Engineers. It's all women, which I love. Adafruit.com. And you will see a variety of Raspberry Pi and other things. There's other devices like that, Arduinos and so forth. Raspberry Pi kits. That can do all sorts of things. So if you have kids,
yes.
Raspberry Pi is, for one thing, Minecraft comes on it. So it's a great way to learn how to program. You can use the Microsoft Windows distribution for Raspberry Pi, which comes with a Minecraft for Education that's programmable by Python. And you can, it's the greatest way to get kids into computing. And it's kind of fun for dad, too, to be honest. Adafruit is a great place. There are many places, but that's where I'd recommend. Adafruit, adafruit.com. Of Tampa, Panama, you should memorize all of those cities, Johnny Jed.
Yeah, I need to.
So you can sing that song.
Because if someone asked me, I'm like, I don't even know.
Where have you been? Yeah. How many countries have you been to?
It depends on which list you're talking to, but close to 100.
Nice. Nice. So. I don't know, but I have that ring on my... I told you about this on my keychain that tells me.
I actually made it my travel product of the week in my newsletter.
Did you?
That
good.
Segment.
Yeah. I should count my rings like a tree. There's quite a few here. I don't think there's 100, though. That's pretty good.
So, you know, the big question is, do you count Wales or Scotland or Ireland?
I count Scotland. I don't count Wales. Ireland, for sure, you count.
Or Northern Ireland.
Well... See, it gets complicated. So you're right.
So that's where, you know, some lists, it's about 100, and some it's like 70.
I have Scotland and Ireland on my ring, but not Wales.
Okay. Well, okay. I would consider Wales as a new country.
Many of our Welsh listeners people. Do as well. You know, we have at least one Welsh listener. He brought me a leek.
A what?
Okay, it's a long story, and I don't know if we want to waste your time telling it, but just put it this way. Amir, will you hand me that leak on the wall there? Can you reach that? Or John? No, here comes John. He'll get it.
So, how are we spelling leak?
L-E-E-K. It has something to do with Shakespeare, Richard III. He said he's a Welsh guy, and the leeks are the national vegetable of Wales.
Okay, that's what I was thinking, but I was like, why is it on the wall?
Because it's a hat.
It's hilarious.
It's a leek hat.
Oh, my God.
And I am now wearing my leek hat while you try to maintain composure and do your travel segment.
I will try, but people need to get onto the podcast to see this, because that is hilarious.
He also brought us a sunflower. I think that has something to do with Wales, too. You know, leeks aren't really good for headphones.
Okay, well.
Just noticed that. Johnny usually brings us better, when Leo doesn't derail him, better ways to travel through technology, a website or an app or something like that. What do you have for us today,
Johnny? All right, well, so yesterday I flew from Los Angeles to Toronto, where I am now, and with my wife, a son, 2-year-old, and my mother-in-law. So, you know.
That sounds like a nightmare trip. I just want to say.
No, and actually, I've been holding this in my back pocket. You know, have you heard of the LAX private suite?
No.
It's the most exclusive private, you know, airport experience you can have.
You had me at exclusive.
It's at the opposite side of the terminals. It's across the runway. It's where the private jets take off.
Oh.
But this thing's owned and managed by Gavin DeBecker and Associates. I don't know if you know who that is, but this guy handles all the heads of states and, you know,
prominent
people.
So it's like better than an executive lounge.
Way better. You know how nice
first class Admiral's Club
is. Way better.
Way better.
So, but it's not cheap. It's crazy expensive. And so,
but it's also far from the gate.
Well, this is the whole thing. So they opened up, I think it was around a year ago, but I think it's $4,500 a year membership, and
yikes.
Then every time you use it, it's $2,700 for domestic flight or $3,000 for international.
They charge you $4,500 a year for the privilege of paying them $2,700 to use it.
Yeah, it's crazy expensive.
Okay. So it's obviously for somebody who has so much money that they don't even know what to do
with
it.
But you're looking at it right now, so you pull up to this, you know, the security just to get in there is insane. You
have to. It should be, yeah.
Send your passport info, all that stuff, and then you get in. And they escort you right to one of these rooms. So you have no idea who else is there. And in these rooms, it's like a hotel room with a nice bathroom, no shower.
Yeah, see,
although they do have,
if you're George Clooney, you want to go here because you don't want to be mobbed in the airport.
That's exactly it. So a lot of big celebrities go there, and that's what they built it for. But it's not cheap. Although they now have a deal with United Airlines that if you're flying United, they are selling access. I'm not sure. I actually have to do my research today. If you have to have a business class ticket or a certain ticket or on certain routes, it's $375 per party, and it's a party of four. So that makes it much more reasonable.
Good discount.
But
yeah.
What makes it so amazing that inside these rooms, they have everything you can possibly imagine. Obviously, everything is – there's no extra fees. But, you know, if you forgot your headphones or your anything to do with electronics or toiletries.
See, this is awesome. So you go – wait a minute. You're missing the highlight here, dude. They have a private TSA screening place.
Exactly.
And then you go out the door and they drive you on the tarmac to the airplane.
That's what I'm talking about.
That's what I'm talking about.
You know, I got some serious.
You even go in the back door of the airplane.
Well, actually, they brought us up to the back door of the gate, but they timed everything. They said, "Do you want to board first or last?" And I said, "We want to board first because we were flying in the bulkhead of coach, and you know, you need to get your bags up quick, otherwise it's all going to be gone.
There's no room."
So we need to be first. So they timed it perfectly, and we were the first ones on. And honestly, my wife said it was almost a little embarrassing because
it's very embarrassing. Are you kidding?
Really red. I mean, even the American Airlines baggage handlers or the gate agents were holding our bags. I'm like, what's going on?
Yeah.
They have a deal with every airline.
They give them a 20 and they hold the bag for you. It's, you know.
Yeah, so it's an experience, and
wow, just driving on the tarmac would be an experience. Holy cow, the planes are all taxiing around. They got these nice beamers, and they drive you. But But this is only in L.A., right? This is the only place they do
right
this.
Right now it's only in L.A., but there's talks about them possibly doing it in – well, there's one in London. There's the Windsor.
I bet you there's one in Aspen.
No, there's they're talking about doing one in New York and Miami, but this is modeled after the Windsor Suite in London, which is – I haven't been to that one, but it's supposed to be spectacular.
Must be nice to be a movie star.
So that
– You get the studio to pay for that, Johnny. You don't have to worry about it. You get the studio to pay for it.
And with and I didn't pay for it. They paid
The Premier Radio Network will pay for it. yeah, you laugh, as you should. I'm going to call the boss, say, hey, you know, I don't like flying in public. Do you mind if I book a little private suite at the airport?
Well, you know, a couple of weeks ago I was flying, and there was an A-list celebrity boarding right in front of me. And you know, they weren't – I didn't even think he wouldn't even went to the lounge.
It's got to be hard for them because, you know, they're kind of trapped.
No one bothered them.
You get mobbed. So,
in L.A., sometimes they don't bother you.
Yes,
I mean, I'll tell you, it was Dustin Hoffman. He was boarding right in front of me.
Right.
And you would think that someone like him would be.
See, my problem is my leak hat. It just attracts attention.
Yeah, you wear that through the airport. And going through LAX, you see almost, if you pay attention, you'll see a celebrity every single time.
Do they wear strange hats? That could be my trademark.
They don't.
Peter O'Toole was famous for green socks. I could be famous for my leak hat. Oh, there's the leak hat guy. That's cool. It's kind of interesting to see how the other half live. I mean, at that price, wow.
But there's an outdoor area actually for kids so they can run around.
That's nice.
Which is cool, and there's even a little putting green. And there's a shower. And by the way, I should mention for the United Airlines, it's a shared lounge. So you would be sharing it with other passengers.
No. I don't
but
want
that's
to
but
share.
Again for that price, that is $375 for a party of four.
Do you want to travel like a rock star? Go to johnnyjet.com. That's Johnny's website. Follow him on Twitter at @JohnnyJet or Instagram. And are you gonna be in Canada for a while? Is this for Christmas?
No, I'm gonna be on a flight in 2 days.
A traveling man. This costume, as Irvine Robb in the chat room says, keeps the little people away from me. Don't bother me. I'm a famous vegetable.
Well, the time ran out quick. I didn't even get to mention my website or app.
Leo ate up your time with his leak story.
Because my website for next week, it will be even better for next week.
Yes, you're saving it. So you're,
and you are doing it next week, right?
Oh, yeah. Let's see. That's the 20th. Oh, I don't know. Am I here on the 20th?
I'll be on Saturday.
23rd? I think so. I think I'm doing shows. I can't remember.
Okay.
Are we doing the radio show? We are. Not the following week.
Correct.
Not on the 30th or the 3rd.
Okay, good.
So you get a week off.
I'm flying on the 30th.
Nice. Nice. You flying somewhere? What are you doing for New Year's Eve?
Can't
you going to Dubai? Are you going to Dubai?
Good. Somewhere good.
You know, my favorite New Year's Eve ever was in 2008-09. We were in Egypt. It was New Year's Eve. They put up tents next to the pyramids. They lit the pyramids at night. They brought us, the bus brought us to the far away. I thought, what are you stopping here for? We got out of the bus. We got on camels. And we rode down a torchlit path on the camels to this tent where they were cooking and there was whirling dervish dancers. New Year's Eve 2009.
That's incredible.
That's it. It's over. I can't beat that.
I want to go to Samoa.
Ooh, what's in Samoa?
And then in the morning I want to fly to American Samoa, which is like a short flight.
Oh, you get two New Year's Eves.
Too, because the time zone,
crazy
the
man,
date line goes through the country.
Remember, we used to do New Year's Eve marathon, the 24 hours of New Year's. Did you know that?
I did. I called in one time from Hawaii.
That's right, because that's what we would do. We would celebrate every hour. In some cases, every half hour. In one case, every 15 minutes, we'd celebrate the new year arriving.
Which
fun.
One's 15 minutes?
I can't remember. There's some place that, you know.
Okay. I know there's some are on the half hour, including one in Canada, I believe, and one in Australia.
Yeah. And then there's what's the name of that island? There's an island.
Oh,
that wanted to be the first.
Vanuatu? No, it's the other one with that's sinking with the N.
Tuvalu?
Tuvalu. Tuvalu. Yeah.
Anyway.
.tv is their internet.
I used to know all of this stuff, but I don't have to anymore because we don't do that anymore.
Yeah.
We stopped because I got a tattoo on my butt and my head shaved. And that Lisa said, okay, we're not doing this anymore.
Okay.
My hair grew back, but my tattoo is still there.
All right. Well, listen, you have a great week.
Thank you, sir.
You might want to take that vegetable off.
I might leave it on all day. It's a very comfortable leak.
It's got to be hot.
No, it's not a hot leak.
Okay.
It's a cool leak. A little fringe.
I like it.
Yeah, I like it too. Thanks, Johnny. Love to the fam. Have a great week, and we'll talk to you next Saturday, right? All right.
I'll see you.
Take care. Bye-bye. Our show today brought to you by CuriosityStream. This is for anybody. I was having so much fun. We're going, you know, when we travel, we like to, before we go somewhere, we like to watch documentaries about the places we're going to go. That way we have a better idea of what to expect. It's kind of, you know, it's like studying. And it's just become a big deal for us. We love documentaries. That's why we love CuriosityStream. It is a subscription streaming service. Over 2,000 documentaries, nonfiction titles, some of the best filmmakers in the world. Originals, too, created by CuriosityStream. It was founded by the guy who did the Discovery Channel, John Hendricks. And I love it because it's on every platform. They have apps for the Apple TV, the Kindle tablets, the Fire, the Chromecast. They have iOS and Android apps that you can put it on your Xbox, your smart TV, your Roku. Just look for CuriosityStream on all of those platforms. Download the app. You'll see incredible shows. By the way, they have UHD and 4K shows as well. That's the premium plan. The basic plan, unlimited access, just $2.99 a month. You know, we were watching documentaries last night. We watched one on Oman, and Lisa said, why don't we do this all the time? Why do we end up watching that junky TV when we could be learning something? I said, yeah, I dig it. That's what we love, it. CuriosityStream. Documentaries in every aspect of science, nature, history. I love history. Technology, society, lifestyle. Stephen Hawking's favorite places. The hunt for dark matter. Birth of the internet. Cyber war. If you like learning, if you're a lifelong learner, and I think because you listen to our podcast, you probably are, you'll love CuriosityStream. Now, here's the deal. Go to curiositystream.com/twit, and you could try it free for a month. Unlimited access to the world's top documentaries and nonfiction series free for your first month. Enter the promo code TWIT, TWIT, when prompted during the sign-up process, and your membership is free for the first month. That's nice. CuriosityStream.com/TWIT. Use the promo code TWIT. First month's free. Of course, they're going to hook you, but that's the idea. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888. Ask Leo the phone number. Back to the phones we go. Seal Beach, California, aptly named on a rainy Sunday. Hey, Terry.
Good day, Leo.
You're from down under.
Not really.
Oh.
But I did listen to your opening monologue about...
what do you think, huh?
Fast mail, and I can kind of feel your pain, because I've had an Outlook mail account for years and years and years and years with a subfolder. Mm-hmm. With an alias email address.
Yeah.
And somehow about 2 weeks ago, it disappeared.
Oh.
And if I send emails to that address, I have no idea where they're going. And I've tried everything to try and recover the folder. I just...
So how did you set up the alias?
That's easy peasy. You just go into Outlook and I was setting up a fourth alias Outlook subfolder email address. Mm-hmm. And the one that used to have its own little dedicated box to the left of the screen that would allow me to, you know, pull up that email address separate from the primary account just disappeared.
Well, I see here a article saying Outlook alias email address not working.
There
so,
we go.
The idea of an alias is really great, and some email providers will do this. It was a different domain than your normal domain, or was it just a different first part of the address?
Well, the primary was, let's say, because I don't want to give out my email.
Yeah, yeah, do pick up some.
It was abc at msn.com.
That's
and
your
then
old one.
The subfolder was xyz at Outlook.
I see.
And for years, I, you know, happily went back and forth between the two of them. And if I wanted to contact somebody, but I didn't want them to have my primary email address where I get all my banking information and secure accounts, I would use the alias.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes perfect sense. So
it's gone.
So there's a couple of ways to do aliases. This is why I asked you. I have many, many aliases through Fastmail because Fastmail has, oh, I don't know, several dozen other domain names registered, not just Fastmail, but, you know, Party Mail and Crazy Mail and all sorts of stuff. And that's very useful because you can just go in the settings there and say, hey, now I want to have an email address with a different address, you know, leo@partymail.net. And then you filter on that and it gives you a separate folder. Outlook, you're kind of doing it. When you ask for an alias, they probably don't give you a whole bunch of choices, right? You can do outlook.com, msn.com.
I think it's now only Outlook.
Yeah. So I wonder, because they killed the MSN service, I wonder if that's related to it. Here's the fix on this Microsoft support entry. It's on the Microsoft support community, and it was from just last month. So it might be germane. The fix was not to use the auto account setup on your device, but to actually go in and manually set up. Do you use IMAP with Outlook?
No, I don't.
Oh, you just use the web-based version.
Yes. Exactly.
Ah, so this wouldn't fix it. Well, then I can't help you. I have a feeling. I wonder if it has something to do with Outlook deprecating the MSN handle and then making everything go to Outlook.com.
Well, can I throw in a little extra wrinkle here?
Yeah.
My primary PC, I'm running Windows 7, and that's where it disappeared. I have a laptop that's running Windows 10, and I'm still able, strangely enough, because it's sort of a different menu on the left-hand side, I'm still able to retrieve emails on my laptop using Windows 10, but not on the Windows 7 machine.
Well, that is a little hint, and it might have something to do then with this IMAP setup. You're saying the browser, you can't see it. Oh, yeah. Here's another possibility. You might have gotten the, quote, new Outlook.
You know, that's one of the things that I saw when I was trying to Google a solution is there's new improved.
It came out a year ago, but not everybody got automatically upgraded. Apparently, you did not. You should look and see if you can go back to the classic view, because it sounds like that's exactly what you've got. You can see it in one view, probably the classic view, but you can't see it in the new view. Does the Outlook page look, because you're only doing this in the browser, right? I just want to clarify
correct.
That. Yeah.
Correct.
So, and you're using the same browser in both cases?
They're both through
Edge or Internet Explorer or Chrome?
Yes, exactly.
Okay. So it's not the browser that's different. It's the Outlook interface that's different. And one way you can tell is it looks different. The color's different. The text fonts are different. Is that the case for you?
That may well be the case.
Yeah. Okay. So that's what's happened is you have been upgraded.
Lucky me.
And it's probably still there. It's just in a different place or it's maybe it isn't there. Maybe maybe their new interface neglected to show. You have a folder view, right?
I do, and that's okay. What I'm looking at.
But it's just not in the folder view.
Exactly. And the strange thing, too, is on my Android phone, it showed up as a subfolder.
Yeah. Because
I was able to retrieve it on my phone as
yeah.
well.
Yeah. So here's the good news. It's still there. Mail is still going to it because it will. What's happened is the user interface has changed on the new Outlook.com. I don't think there's a way to go back. Let me just check. How do I go back? It's no longer possible to return to the classic version.
Hmm.
So I'm just looking at the Microsoft support, Office support. So you can't go back to Classic. I'm not sure why it's changed on one machine and not the other. They supposedly forced it on everybody a few months ago. So I'm not sure why you're still on the old Classic version in some places. One way to do it, maybe try a different browser. It may be browser sensitive. What are you using?
Internet Explorer.
Okay. So try it in Edge on Windows 10. Try it, maybe download Chrome or Firefox, try it there. The problem is the folder's not gone. It's that the user interface is no longer allowing you to access it, which is a strange thing. That sounds like a bug. But, that's the other option, is to contact Microsoft and say, you got a bug. I used to be able to drop this folder down, and now I can't. And so it really does sound like this was part of the new user interface. And in the places where it hasn't been upgraded, your older version of Windows, your phone, you could still see it. That's the good news. It's still there. Uncle Bix reminding me there is a new feature that's called Focused Inbox that will simplify the interface and hide deep folders. If you've got that turned on where on the machine you can't see the private folder, turn that off. Turn off Focused Inbox. I suspect there's a setting somewhere. I do. I suspect there's a setting somewhere, and it's just a view. So the good news is the mail's still going in that folder because you can still see it. It's just that you can't see it on that one machine. Somebody says, the reason Leo is wearing a leak hat is to symbolically protest the new rule in Australia on email encryption. Okay, good. I like it. I do. I like it. Actually, my decision on this was to leave Fastmail. I haven't done it yet, but I will be leaving Fastmail and hosting my own email. There's a company, it's kind of pricey, called Helm, that makes a home email server that is secure. I'll give you a review when I get it set up. Helm is I think it's $500. That's the problem, and $100 a year. But I love the idea. TheHelm.com. If you want to know more, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More calls after this. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smartwatches, all that jazz. 88 ask. Oh, sorry, the Russians were taking over briefly. 88 ask Leo. Maybe it's because of the hat Kim Schaffer has decided. Is it cold? You look like Maria Butina. What are you? She's wearing a Russian fur hat.
I'm a spy.
Yes, you are a spy.
I am spy.
Okay, well, tell callers we will be putting him on air soon.
Soon.
Moose and squirrel. That's how my accent comes from, I have to admit, Rocky and Bullwinkle. I'm Boris, Natasha and Boris. We'll call us Natasha and Boris. And we'd get Moose and Squirrel to answer the phone. 8888 Ask Leo phone number. If you want to call, you can call from Russia. Have we ever had, Kim, have we ever had a call from Russia?
I think so.
I think we have.
Pretty sure.
Yeah. Pretty much anywhere in the world because of the internet. People listen all over the show, all over the world to the show. And I like that. So if you want to call from Russia or anywhere outside the U.S.
Call me.
Or Canada, call. The way you do it, though, is you can't just call the phone number. It won't work. You have to use Skype out or some other voice over the internet that allows you to call phone numbers. It should be free, though, because it is a toll-free number in the U.S. and Canada. 8888-ASK-LEO or 888-827-5536. Yes. Dr. Mom is on the line. Hello, Dr. Mom.
Hey, Leo. Didn't think I'd be talking to you again so soon.
I know. We talked last week. I forgot to wish you happy Hanukkah, by the way. I apologize.
That's okay.
Are you still in San Diego for the holidays, or have you gone home?
No, back in New York.
Oh, man. I had a good time last week in New York. Really enjoyed it. I'm sorry I missed you.
Well, another time before we finally move out there. Yeah. Reason I'm calling is things are hopping with Amazon. They've released three new things for the, let's call it the Echo. So I don't set everybody's...
Thank you. Don't set off the A word, yeah. So, there. You know, I got... So I don't think Michael listens. Our 16-year-old listens to the show, so I can tell you this. I got him that little one you talked about that's just an Echo without a speaker. What's that called?
The input.
The Echo input. Because I have a speaker. I bought the Big Mouth Billy Bass that is Echo enabled. So, but what it turns out, it doesn't have Echo built into it. It's just a Bluetooth speaker. So you pair it to the Echo input. And you can, I'm going to glue the Echo input behind it or something. And then when Echo responds, the Billy Bass lip syncs it. And if you play music, it'll sing along and dance.
I want a picture of this, or actually better, I want a video.
I will post a video on the blog. Michael is going to be so unhappy. We put an Echo in his room once when Amazon announced that ability to broadcast, because I thought, oh, this would be handy for saying, you know, wake up, come to dinner, that kind of thing. Lasted about 3 days before he disconnected it. I'm hoping the Billy Bass will last a little bit longer.
As well he should.
So what has Amazon announced this week? They are just prolific as heck with this thing.
I think right now as they're pushing out stuff, some of it they announced in September at the event to get people to buy the devices before Christmas. The first thing they did was, if you go into settings, you will now see that you can get the Echo to check your email. And now you can sit there and ask, read me my mail. And it'll read you any mail that you have marked unread or new.
I don't know if I want to have the Echo read to me. It's not the best voice synthesis.
It's not bad. Right now it is limited to Gmail and to Microsoft Mail.
Okay, that was my question. So you have to somehow associate your Outlook.com or your Gmail account with your Amazon Echo account.
That is correct. What you can do, which may be interesting, is let's say you're expecting an email from me, you can say, Echo, did I get an email from Dr. Mom? And it'll say no, but then when it does show up, it'll say, oh, your email showed up.
Oh, see, I don't mind that. That would be handy. Okay.
That's good. You can give voice dictations, and I already set it up so it says at the bottom, dictated from my A, so that people don't think I'm simply drunk typing.
Yeah, because there's no way to check it.
Well, there is if you do it on a show. If you do it on the show, you actually see the words coming up.
I'm told that the kids these days, because autocorrect is so ubiquitous and everybody's constantly texting each other, that they don't even bother anymore to correct it. It's kind of an in-joke, you know. Everybody knows, oh, there's autocorrect. Sometimes it's hard to figure out what the message is supposed to say, but so it's good. You put the signature. This was sent for my Echo, so don't expect it to be well edited.
Don't expect correct punctuation, correct grammar. I'm a child of the 50s.
There may even be odd words in there, right? You know,
very odd. Yes. So that's creep factor number one. Do you really want Amazon reading your mail? Even though they swear all they're doing is kind of looking at the addresses, maybe.
Yeah.
The second one was another one they announced in September. It is now rolling out. You may or may not have it activated yet. Called, I don't want to, Alexa Guard.
Ah! So the Alexa Guard does what?
If when you leave the house, you tell it to turn the guard on, it listens for sounds that identifies as smoke detectors and glass breaking.
Oh.
So, and then you get a notification that you can set it up to do things like, if it hears glass breaking, turn on every speaker in the house and start blaring, it's the police.
Oh, you can?
Something on that level.
Oh, that's awesome. Put your hands up. Come out with your hands up. We're outside. Oh, that'd be great.
Right. Yeah, it's going to come from the speakers in the house, so I'm not sure the crooks are going to believe that.
Crooks are dumb. They wouldn't be crooks if they weren't dumb.
That's true.
Crooks are politicians.
Again, to me, it's interesting. If you're looking at, I think, Amazon moving into the home security business. They've got all these ways to monitor your house.
Oh, yeah. Well, they already have. They have security cameras. They have locks.
Right.
I mean, they've bought all of this technology. They want to be... You know, in these days, saying Amazon is an X company is almost meaningless because really I think what Amazon wants to be is an everything company.
I agree. And this one, they don't have their own smoke detectors. I'm waiting for them to buy First Alert.
Right.
And put that one in.
Right.
But
it'll be funny if a bad guy breaks into my house and then the Big Mouth Billy Bass says, "Who you looking at, baby?" Oh, I'm going to have some fun with this one.
That would be worse. You got the video, you got your camera on.
You talking to me? I know you're talking to me. Wow. Wow. That would be interesting.
That's interesting. But again, you're going to have to trust Amazon that it's only going to listen when you put the guard on. And it's only going to listen for the sounds of breaking glass or smoke detectors going off.
They're not the first to do this, by the way. There are other devices, other cameras that will actually listen for those kinds of sounds. So, but it's nice. I mean, many people have Amazon Echoes all over their house, as I do. It sounds like you do, too. Did you buy the clock?
That's what I was, that was number three. I did because it's not that expensive. To me, it's almost a logical extension if you have an Echo in the kitchen.
Yeah, who doesn't use the Echo for timers? That's the first thing you do. And for many of us, it's the only thing you do. You know, Echo, set a timer for string beans for 6 minutes. I mean, I do that every night.
Exactly. And I will tell you, the one limitation of the Echoes in the kitchen is I tried to put a show in the kitchen and took it out. Because no matter how clean your kitchen is, no matter how many fans, a layer of grease and stuff gets on things when you're sautéing stuff. And I found the screen was getting gunked up and everything. So I put a dot in there.
Okay, that makes sense.
And now actually I put an input in because I have a Sonos speaker with an auxiliary jack into it. So I just put that in there.
So the clock is not a speaker, but it's kind of cool because you can talk to it. I guess it has does it have a little speaker in it?
No,
it doesn't.
The specs don't list a speaker.
Yeah, but what really is cool is when you set a timer, it has an analog around the outside lights that will do the countdown for you, which is kind of cool. Because I'm always looking to see what the time is. Dr. Mom, always a pleasure. Dr. Grandma, I should say, always a pleasure. Thank you, Lil.
Okay.
For our Amazon, it's going to start becoming a regular thing if Amazon keeps putting stuff out, our Amazon update. 8888 Ask Leo, that's the phone number. If you're calling from Russia, I don't know how to say it in Russian. 888-827-5536. Call now. Operators are standing by. Chris Marquardt.
Hello.
Hello, hello, hello. I like your fez, my friend.
Well, you're doing the hat thing.
Should do a hat thing. I'll get a... Michael's German teacher gave him a cowboy hat in the German flag colors, yellow, red, and black.
That is awesome.
I figure it must have been from a football game or something, right?
That's not a thing. We don't do this.
You don't wear cowboy hats at football matches?
Not really.
How about that?
Well, I really go to football matches. So
everybody knows Austria really should be part of Germany.
Well, no. Don't say
don't
that.
Start that. Don't start that.
Don't start
talk.
That again, okay?
Yeah, let's not go there again.
No.
I think this is Austrian, right? That's an Austrian hat.
Well, this could be Bavarian. This could be Bavarian as well.
It's Bavarian, yeah.
Yeah, which is German, yep.
Yeah. And I have a beer stein. Let me get that.
Oh, no. help.
Oh, yeah, that beat that's, up red.
That's going to be the stereotypes show. So I should have a cowboy hat now just to do this in reverse. But I don't. Yeah. But you do know that it's only a real stein if it has a little lid on it.
I know, I need that little metal lid. We have one at home we bought in Germany because we were the perfect tourists. I even bought Lederhosen, as you know.
I do know
I
that.
I haven't worn that in a while. I better...
I mean, this one definitely beats the leak, that's for sure.
I have all the nationalities. That's the key, right?
Yeah, that's fine. No,
ready
that's
to
cool.
do any nationality. All right, well, we'll talk in about 10.
Talk to you then.
Thanks. Please don't break what out? Oh, yes, from Bayern. All right, so it counts. All right. I thought it was Austrian, but yeah, it's kind of, what is it? It's Innsbruck. It is Austrian. It's from Held in Innsbruck. But you know, that, like I said, it's kind of a distinction without a difference. Yeah, it's from Innsbruck, Boldy. So I think somebody sent me this, and I think he was Australian. I mean, no, Austrian. Austrian. It's very confusing. You know, I got tricked into the Lederhosen. It was bad. We were, can't remember what town we were in, Würzburg or somewhere. And the guide, the local guide, said, oh, you have to have Lederhosen if you're going to Oktoberfest. You can't even, he said, people get, you know, they won't even let you in if you're not wearing Lederhosen. And he was wearing Lederhosen. So he convinced us, it was probably a scam. He probably got a kickback from the Lederhosen store. But yeah, so the reason I was happy to get it is because I got, when I was a kid in Germany in 1967, I bought Lederhosen. And our German friend, Leo, his name was, and that's why I remember his name, told me, yeah, you don't ever clean them. In fact, you wipe your butter knife on them. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 88-esque Leo. That should be my song, As a Lover Boy. Our musical director, Big Pee-wee, spinning the disc. Thank you, Big Pee-wee. Line four is Josh in Mesa, Arizona. Hello, Josh.
Hey, Leo. Long time no see. Last time I saw you was a Call for Help, I believe.
What? Back 20 years ago now.
Yeah.
Did you come to the studio or you just used to watch the show?
Well, I just came upon this just last weekend.
Oh, you didn't even know I existed still. You thought...
I figured you were still around, but I just didn't know you were still doing like tests and stuff.
Once in a while, people will say, are you still alive? Oh, I haven't heard about... I haven't heard from you in 20 years. Yes, I'm still here. And yeah, isn't it sad? I'm still doing exactly the same thing.
No, I'm actually kind of glad you are because, you should have put a disclaimer. I became the family tech guy, and so this is all your fault now.
I like
it. Now I'm having to fix things remotely, but I'm in Arizona, and family's back in Nebraska, so.
Do you use remote access? What do you do?
Well, I can't on some of these issues.
Sometimes you need it physically. You and I, you share my pain because a lot of times people will call and I'll say, you know, if I were sitting in front of your computer, I could probably fix this in 2 minutes. But
it's hard
to do it by phone.
Yep.
And especially on the radio, you can't exactly walk people through. Okay, let's open that log file and walk through it. You don't want to do that.
Exactly,
it does not make it very entertaining. Yeah.
No, and then hard part is they are, they're like, yeah, I need this fixed now or yesterday or what have you.
Oh, I'm so sorry you got in that. I should really. In fact, we're going to start doing a disclaimer before every show. Yeah, not only saying watch out, but saying never admit to knowing anything. Right? At work or at home, if you admit or you somehow appear to be geeky, you will be bombarded. Yeah. You'll be peppered. You won't be able to, it's like being a doctor. You won't be able to go to a party without saying, hey, you don't mind, I got this question about my smart, and they'll pull out their phone, and all of a sudden, you're the tech guy. Well, you have my sympathy. I should have warned you, Josh, 20 years ago. Now it's too late.
That's all right. I actually love this stuff, so.
Good. It is fun. I love it, too. Yep. So what can I do to make you a better tech guy?
Well, so I have an old laptop. It was my mom's, and my sister has it. And what's happening is when she boots up the computer, it auto logs right into the computer. But what she's getting an issue with the desktop is an unavailable error.
Oh, that's interesting.
So I've did some searching. I threw a few questions there in chat. And I was trying to follow it.
You found our chat. That's good. Yeah, the chat is a bunch of tech guys and gals.
Yep. No, I went to, I saw one thing on a YouTube kind of thing. They said just to create a desktop folder in the system.
Oh, gosh. Oh,
next to app data.
No, stop. Did you?
That's why I was like, what?
Okay. No.
But I did find the link that they provided in chat, and I did find that one. So I was like, really? Just copy the desktop and put it in that?
So here's the thing. Every user with a login has a profile. So she has the problem is, you know, she's auto logging in, so you don't know what the name of her profile is. And it may be that. Okay, but it may also be that, you know, she's auto logging into a damaged profile or non-existent profile. So the first thing you want to do is stop the auto login. Now, it could potentially be problematic if she doesn't know her password.
Well, that's not the hard part. So she passed away this year.
Oh, you don't have access. Oh, you didn't throw in that one.
I'm trying to help my sister because she's trying to use like a design printer. I can't remember.
Honestly, my attitude towards this is unless there's something on there that you want of your sister's memories or whatever, anytime you got to use.
There's a lot.
There is. Okay. And so you're trying to get stuff off of there.
My mom's stuff.
Yeah. See, it's one thing for the application, but it's another thing for the data. If you really need that data, yeah, we got to figure this out. There's probably an administrator account on here. And I think that'd be the best thing.
It is. And that's the one that auto logs in.
Right, but there's also almost certainly a hidden administrator account as well.
Mm-hmm.
So Google the hidden administrator account, and depending on the version of Windows, it'll have instructions for how to get in there. That's a separate account. You're saying you don't see anything. You see a black screen once it logs in?
Well, no. You get the error, and you kind of see the desktop, and you see the taskbar. We're able to do the control alt delete to get the task manager open.
Oh, good. Okay.
We kind of try to do a cheat through there. And,
so what does the error message say?
It, hold on. It's on my phone.
I love supporting the tech support, guys.
Fun part.
Yeah.
they take pictures of the error, and then now you're trying to.
Now I'm putting you on the spot. It's all right. It's not absolutely critical, but that'll give you some idea of what's going wrong. It sounds like a file is corrupt in the profile. It's a little trickier because you don't know the password, so you can't really create a new profile. You'll need the password to access her data, and you want that data.
That's what I'm thinking. Like, what if we created like a profile, like just a generic one? And so we kind of backwards went through Task Manager, went through the run. Tried to launch the control panel from there and then go into the user account.
Yeah.
Then see if we could create the another profile.
What version of Windows is it?
It's 10.
All right. So I think your best bet is to see if the hidden administrator account is there. It's not always there on all systems, but if it is, that will allow you to get in there, log in, and log in with permissions that will allow you then to get the data folder. You'll be able to run programs and so forth. My strong suggestion, because you don't know what state that computer is in, is get the data that you want, your mom's data, whoever's data, your sister's, whatever you need. Get that data, put it on a external hard drive, back it up, and then wipe the drive and start over. And that's really almost always the best solution with a used computer because you don't want to inherit malware or anything else that's on there. So look and see if you can enable, and I'll put a link in the show notes, you know, on how to enable the hidden Windows 10 administrator account, because it's there in most cases. And by doing that, you'll be able to get at full administrator access to the hard drive. It would help to know the error message, and you can use that in your Google searches, because that'll tell you what files are damaged. And almost certainly that's all it is. If you can get to the point where you can get to Task Manager, you see the taskbar. It's just some basic files. It may even be that desktop folder, believe it or not. It may be the icon cache is damaged. Something's damaged and Windows is choking when it tries to load it. Nice to meet you again after 20 years, Josh. Now you know the way. Call anytime. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Chris Marquardt, our photo guy, coming up next. Our show today brought to you by our new credit card. I'd show it to you, but I don't want you to get the number. It's a pretty little gray thing. It's called Brex. See, you can see it on the screen right there. BREX. It's the first corporate credit card for startups. And it's exactly what we were looking for. We're not exactly a startup, but we're a small business. And here's what we like about it. It's a 5-minute online application. Very easy to do. You don't have to call a bank. You don't have to. It's very easy to get. It's a Visa card. It's a real credit card. But I love this. The underwriting is based entirely on the cash in your bank account, on your cash flow. So that means a couple of things. They can offer your company 10 to 20 times higher limits than other corporate credit cards. And your personal, there's no personal liability as the owner. I love that. By the way, boy, do they have great rewards. High-value rewards specifically tailored to your business. 7 times the points on rideshare. 7x. 3 times the points on restaurants and travel. Twice double points on software. No limit on how many points you can earn. And I know what you're saying. Well, what do I need? I don't need those. It's like cash. Points can be redeemed for statement credit on transactions. Now what do you say? Exclusive offers with some of the best technology brands, too, will save you lots of money. AWS, Google, we're a G Suite house. It saves us money on G Suite. Salesforce, everybody uses that, right? WeWork, it's great for a small business, an individual, an entrepreneur, a sole proprietor. Brex underwrites your company, not you. No minimum operating history, great for startups. No painful paper application, great for everybody. No personal liability required. They use the cash raised by your business to extend credit, which means no, you don't need a credit score, you don't need a social security number, you don't need a security deposit. You're getting a great card, a Visa card that you completely control. You can instantly issue cards to employees, set limits, control spend via virtual cards. That's instant, by the way. As soon as you sign up, employees will have access to online virtual cards. Then they quickly mail the physical card. I got mine in a day or two. I think it was FedExed and almost overnight. If it wasn't, maybe it was overnight. Every employee can have a corporate card with real-time limits that can be adjusted by an administrator. This is exactly what you want. It's got embedded expense management software. So here, I'll give you an example. So I'm at a restaurant. First time I used it, this blew me away. I'm used to it now. I love it. I charged something on the Brex card. I charged the meal. And, you know, it was a business meal. Brex sent me, so I charged on the Brex card. Brex sent me a text, said, we see you just used the card. Take a picture of the receipt. Oh, okay. Took a picture of the receipt. It said, okay, good. We've matched that to the transaction. We've categorized it, and we put it in your QuickBooks. Thank you very much. You can throw the receipt away now. Oh, I love that. I love that. Join thousands of startups and tech companies who use Brex to manage their growing business needs and earn valuable rewards while doing so. The card is free, and you'll get Brex card fees waived in perpetuity because you're listening. Brex.com/twit. Brex.com/twit. The first corporate credit card for startups. Get it free and no card fees in perpetuity at Brex. You got to use this. .com/twit. What are we talking about today, Mr. Marquardt?
We are going to talk about how smartphones are taking over.
Oh, they are. They are. They are indeed.
And there's a few bastions that have already fallen, and there's more to come. You see, what's that sigh about? Isn't that cool to have smartphones and things instead of the big cameras?
Yeah, I like carrying a camera around. Yeah, I just got this crazy thing that probably will go nowhere because why do you need this? It's a video camera from DJI. It's the Osmo Pocket.
The Osmo, yeah.
It's a little mini gimbal, though. See how little it is?
It is very exciting on the first look, but then if you
see what do you need it for?
Well, if you see how good the stabilization in your smartphone has become, in the new new GoPro? Well, they sell themselves, or they build themselves as the gimbal killer. So
right.
There's certainly some application for that. It's neat.
I think the Fusion, and I have a Fusion, does a little bit better than this. But it is so tiny that it's kind of cool.
It is, yeah. It's a pretty amazing product for sure, but I don't know if I have any use for it anyway.
Yeah, it's this little carrying case so you don't bung it up.
I'm still in the process of trying to take less stuff with me instead of more.
Well, that's my problem is I'm always having to buy new stuff to review. So here we go.
And then you need new bags and stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. I just got a bag that I must have kickstarted a year ago or something from Alpaca. It's like, what is this? Oh, this must have been an old Indiegogo or something. Back when I was fetishizing bags. Here we go. Chris Marquardt's wearing a fez, so I'm going to wear a Bavarian hat.
You started the hats. You started them today.
I have a rather large collection, Chris. Don't challenge me.
No, I wouldn't be able. I think I have 5 or 6 hats. That's
I have
about
500 or 600 hats hanging on the wall right here. So Chris is a fabulous photographer, and he leads wonderful workshops. You can find more about them at discoverthetopfloor.com. While you're there, take a look at his new book on wide-angle photography, which I've been loving, Chris. Very inspiring.
Thank you so much.
You're trying to put yourself out of business.
No, not really. I mean, you're referring to what's coming up.
You want to tell us how good smartphone cameras are. But if everybody used a smartphone camera, would they need your books and workshops?
Of course they would. Oh, there's always the human factor. There's always the human factor. If you have a camera, you still have to point it somewhere. You still have to decide when you press that shutter button. You still have to.
That's a good point.
See how the light goes and how that
you actually
interferes or helps the photo.
You do camera phone workshops, don't you?
No, not really.
Oh,
but
okay.
There's always people on the workshops who want to learn how to do. You know, it's universal. If you learn how to do this, you will be able to do it with any camera.
That's right.
But the smartphones are moving in interesting ways, and I've been trying to understand where they are going and what's going to happen in the future of that. And there are three bastions that the bigger cameras with the bigger sensor, the DSLRs and even the interchangeable lens cameras kind of had, and the smartphones couldn't do anything about them. And they are eating away at that piece by piece. And the first one is, and that's been around for a while now, automatic HDR.
Yeah.
So you have a scene in front of you. Want to take a photo of a scene that has very bright and very dark areas, and together that's a bit too much for that tiny sensor because the pixels are so small and they can't really deal with that. So in the past you would have had a bigger sensor with a bigger camera, and that would be able to deal with that a bit better. And the smartphones have at one point just begun, or the manufacturers have made the smartphones make HDR photos. They take several exposures at different times, and so at different brightnesses, and then they computationally merge them together into one photo that has high dynamic range. That's now on smartphone, that's the default. That's what they do. They automatically detect, is that a scene that needs that? And then they just do it, and a picture comes out. With the iPhones, you can't even decide for that now. It just happens. So if you want to do this with a DSLR, you'd have to use separate software and take separate pictures and put the camera on a tripod to get it really well. So HDR is kind of taken care of by the smartphones now. And that is very, very exciting. There's a second thing that the bigger cameras used to be really good at, and or they're still really good at, just from a physical point of view, and that is shallow depth of field. That's in the background, the autofocus background behind portraits, and the smartphones have pretty much taken over there, or they are. Let's say they are in the process of taking over, because they have really good ways of simulating that. And they use the depth information that they get when they have multiple cameras. They use just fancy software, artificial intelligence to kind of figure out, is that a face? Even some of the phones that only have one lens on the front can do this now. They figure out, is that a face? So the rest must be the background. And then they apply different focus to different things.
Apple calls that portrait mode.
It's called portrait mode. Yeah. I'm not sure what the others call it, but that's kind of the term that has established itself. And that's the second bastion that is in the process of falling. So you won't really need those big cameras anymore. And now here's the third one. And you have probably held the Google Pixel 3.
I am holding it right now.
And it has a mode called Night Sight.
Oh, it's amazing.
Which is, again, this is one of the last bastions that the bigger cameras still kind of have, and that's the low light photography. That is good looking photography when there's not much light. And Do you know, traditionally with a bigger camera, you'd have to put the camera on a tripod, do a long exposure to get good coverage from darker scenes, or you'd have to use a flash, or you'd have to use other ways of doing that. And what Google is doing now, and by the way, this is not a Google specific thing, everyone is working on that, and I'd say within months everyone is going to offer something very, very similar.
Now that Google's shown the way, yeah.
what they do, this is kind of the amazing thing. You turn on the camera, and even before you press the shutter, it's already taking pictures, which is interesting. So you point it at something. At this point, it's already taking pictures. And it decides by measuring how much you move that camera and by measuring how the things in the picture move. It takes exposures at different exposures, and then you press the shutter, and then it takes a few more. Interestingly enough, the moment you press the shutter, that's one of the least important exposures, because that's when you usually jerk the phone and
the camera jiggles. Yeah,
you get camera shake in the photo. So it takes photos from before and after the shutter press, and it analyzes them and makes sure that they kind of line up nicely, and then it lines them up and it stacks them, and it does something that astrophotographers have used for a long time. That's called exposure stacking. So they use several exposures of the same thing and they stack them on top of each other, and that reduces the noise and makes things brighter. And I think the Pixel 3 takes up to 15 exposures.
Yeah.
And merges them together into this one final photo.
Like a quarter second. I mean, they really open it up. And I was
But handheld, that's the thing. Handheld. It's handheld. So it will know, oh, he moved the camera, I cannot use that shot. But he was holding still for a 15th of a second, I can use that shot. So it kind of measures and
the only thing wrong analyzes with this and is it looks like it's well lit. So people can't tell what magic you're doing. I was just looking at some pictures from our Christmas party, and it was dark in there, but it looks well lit. There's a picture here that I took of our local theater that I've never been able to get with any camera, because the theater marquee is lit and very bright. And so either it's well exposed or the background is well exposed. Either way, something's
going to... Or the people in front of it, you know?
But and this
you have
got
everything.
It got
there.
It all. I don't even handheld. It's magic.
And it doesn't look too artificial, you know.
No,
they still have to do some magic, and you get a bit of this HDR look, which kind of gets to be the normal thing right now. So no one really complains about that. And I don't think there's anything wrong with using that kind of processing power and analysis of the photos and merging of them, if the result is good. And that seems like the results are really good. Yeah,
totally amazing. Just blows my mind. I really love this Pixel 3. It's really the only phone, the only camera I need to take with me in many cases, which is a shame because, as you know, I spend a lot of money on cameras. Chris Marquardt will help you save money at discoverthetopfloor.com. Don't forget our photo essay, our assignment. We're looking for you to take pictures of
Ring,
and upload them to our Flickr group, the tech guy group at flickr.com. Next week, should we, or?
We'll review that next week.
All right. Thank you, Chris. Thanks, Chris Marquardt. We'll see you next week.
Thank you.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More calls right after this. Yeah, I mean, when I thought I should take a picture of this marquee because I've never been able to get a satisfactory picture of it. And
this is all very mind-boggling and very, very straightforward. If you look at the technology, it's just that the phones now have the processing power. They have the cameras that can handle that. They have the bandwidth. Everything is kind of coming together. There's really interesting developments right now.
Yeah.
So, it's not long that... I mean, and it means every time something like this gets added to what the phones can do, people have one less reasons to go and buy
it's
a bigger camera.
True.
So there is...
I feel bad for camera manufacturers, to be honest.
Well, they're now going full frame mirrorless. They are trying to attack that same kind of market from the other end, from the bigger sensor end. So
yeah, Scott Bourne was telling me yesterday that Canon's going to do HDR in camera HDR.
They have to do something to stop that development for sure.
Yep.
Absolutely.
You know what it's really hard for, and you're right, Atort Aloha, Anthony Tortiello, our another professional photographer in the chat room. It's hard on pros because there's so many images now that you've got to really do something extra to stand out as a professional. I mean, you know, the standards are very much higher than they used to be.
Oh, Leo, thanks, Mike, for reminding me. A totally unrelated question. Do you know a Bluetooth extender? Is there something like that? I'm trying to extend the reach of my HomeKit hub. Any ideas? I haven't found anything other than some DIY Raspberry Pi-based kind of thing.
I don't know of anybody. You know who would know for sure.
There were some announced, but they never made it into products, so...
And I suspect these things must exist because, for instance, the Ring security system has an extender.
Yeah, but that's only for the Ring system.
Right.
So that doesn't span any other. So I'm looking for like Elgato.
I think Bluetooth is intentionally limited to 10 meters just because they want proximity is a big part of Bluetooth.
True.
So, I don't know of any. Interesting. I'll keep my eye peeled. Chat room, come up with something for Mr. Marquardt. Thank you, Chris.
All right,
have a great day.
See you next week then.
All right,
take care.
Last one before your vacation.
Yes, thank you.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo, the phone number. Gary, Buffalo, New York. Leo here. What can I do for you today?
All right, Leo. Hey, I know you're not a fan of antivirus on computers, but I have Android phones and I'm not going to upgrade to 9 because I have a program that won't work under 9 and I use it quite often. I'm wondering if I should get an antivirus for the phone just to at least tell me when something's gone wrong so I can reset it.
No, all you really need to do is make sure you only download apps from the Play Store. And your previous version of Android, Oreo, I presume you're running 8, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Oreo, starting, I think, with Oreo, might have been even earlier, Google scans all your downloads against a known virus database. And that's all any antivirus can do on Android. No third-party program does more than that. Partly because this is the problem with an antivirus on mobile is that mobile platforms are more secure. They don't allow third-party programs to play the tricks that they play on desktop computers. An antivirus on Windows actually hooks itself into the Windows kernel, and that's how it maintains its, you know, monitoring of the system. You can't do that on an Android device. And you really can't do that on an Apple device. But the good news is that enhanced security also helps protect you. Programs are sandboxed from one another. You probably hear, and I always hear, and there was another one just this week about Android malware. And, you know, whenever they talk about it, they always say 50,000 people downloaded this Android malware. But the problem actually was 500,000 that downloaded the most recent one, 13 different malware apps on the Play Store. It is the case that apps can get through on the Play Store, but they tend to be things that most people aren't downloading anyway. They're junkware. They're immediately apparent to be junkware. If you stick with, you know, well-known programs and you let Google scan it, I'm sure that that's turned on. As you download them, you're as safe as you'll get. There's no point in getting Lookout or AVG or something on your Android device. It won't make you any safer.
Yeah, I usually just use paid programs anyway. So.
No virus program is going to be a paid program. There is a risk that, and this is why you want to get it from reputable sources. There is a risk that somebody could take a known or reputable program, modify it, and then somehow sneak it onto the store. There's also all sorts of tricky things people do, like make the malware be part of several different programs, encourage you to download all three, and then it reassembles itself, but thereby bypassing the scanner. That's how this malware worked. It asks you when you install it. So this is why I'm not worried about it. So this malware, that 13 apps that you probably saw the headlines a couple of weeks ago, 560,000 downloads. They were all made by the same developer. They looked like car racing games. But when you downloaded the game, it would crash. And it would say, oh, you need to install a separate program, an additional APK, which you're going to get from somewhere besides the Play Store called Game Center. And that activated the malware. So if you don't do dumb, I shouldn't say dumb. If you try to stick to mainstream stuff on the Google Play Store, Google's scanning will work. So the scanning would have detected this. The way they got around the scanning is this APK that you then sideloaded. You're fine. I think the threat of malware on Android is well overreported. I've never known anybody, and I've never been bit. It's more of a theoretical thing, and no antiviruses can do a better job of protecting you. That's really the bottom line.
Sorry, yeah, because I was worried that I'm not upgrading them.
Yeah, and that's a reasonable worry, but you want to make sure you continue to get the security updates. So Google still puts out monthly security updates for Oreo, and those are the key.
Here's my concern, though. I'm turning off. I read somewhere I forget what it was, but under developer options, if I turn off auto update or something, because I don't want to go to 9.1. I use a phone recording app, and it will not work under 9.0, apparently.
I mean, the ability. What you want to do is hope that somebody will make a new version of that, or they'll figure out a way around Google's restrictions.
Apparently Google is my understanding is Google left the hole for developers and now they've closed it.
Yeah.
And you have to root to get it, but the phone I have can't be rooted. It has a locked bootloader. So
yeah, you understand why Google would prevent somebody from recording phone calls.
I understand why they'd want to do it on a nationwide basis. I have to live in a state where
it's legal.
You have to have one party.
Yeah.
Totally legal, so it's not an issue. I understand. They've got to worry.
It's not merely legality. I think it's also they're worried about third party again malware doing things that they shouldn't be doing. So Apple does the same thing. They really restrict what third party apps can do, and unfortunately, that makes some apps unusable. You stick with 8, and somehow you want to get those security updates. There's got to be a way to do that. I'm thinking about this. You've turned off updates because you don't want to get 9. You don't want to get that auto update. I'm going to have to do some research. There must be a way to get the security updates without updating to 9. Because that's what you want.
Yep.
Those security updates are for 8, and they will make big differences in patches and so forth. They also, I'm sure, update the scanner from time to time. And I don't know if turning off updates blocks that. It probably doesn't. But that needs to keep up to date, obviously. Yeah. So this is you're safe. You know, don't forget that I can't remember what the stats are, but it's a fraction. It's a single digit percentage of Android users are using Android 9. It unlike the iPhone, where everybody upgrades pretty much as soon as they can. In the Android space, most of the phones out there are cheap phones that can't and won't be upgraded. And so Google does a lot to keep those phones as safe as it can without the cooperation of the carriers and the manufacturers. They have to. There's limited things they can do. One of them, though, is this Google Play Store scanning thing, which is, I think, a very good idea. You're fine. I'm sure you're fine. I've never met anybody or seen anybody, and I have vast experience with users, obviously, who's been bit by malware. Now somebody's going to call and say, I was. Android malware is just not prevalent. You read about both Android and iOS malware, but when you dig deeper and look at the mechanism required and the, frankly, dumb behavior on the part of users that was required for them to get infected, you realize, oh, I guess it's not that big a threat. I'm not too worried about it. And, of course, the other side of that is there's really nothing you can do that's better because of the way mobile operating systems are designed. I don't recommend antiviruses for Windows or Mac either, although you can make a stronger case for them. I worry about the instabilities and even insecurities that are introduced by running any program that hooks itself deep into the operating system like that, as all antiviruses do. And we've seen numerous big-name antiviruses that have had flaws in them that have allowed bad guys access to your system. That's exactly the opposite of what you want an antivirus to do. That's terrible. Cube ACR on the Note 8 with Android 8 allows you to record calls. Yeah, I think Google Voice has a record button, but what Google Voice does, and obviously he doesn't want to do, is announces it. This call is now being recorded. And it's pretty clear that the reason he's recording is he doesn't, he wants the recording without the other guy knowing. No judgment on that. He might be a private investigator. I don't know what he's doing, and it's legal in his state. That's something else to be aware of. Many states require both parties on the line to consent. But many states don't. One party, the guy doing the recording, that's the only person who has to say it's okay. It's okay with me. I'm going to record you. Is that okay with you? I don't care. We're going to take a break for news at the top of the hour. I have lots more time, lots more calls. 8888 Ask Leo. Answers will appear on the website too, techguylabs.com. Our show today brought to you by Rocket Mortgage. Nothing crazy about Rocket Mortgage. It's from Quicken Loans, the number one lender in the country. Number one in a couple of ways in customer satisfaction, according to J.D. Power, for mortgage origination. That means, you know, the mortgage approval process. And number one, according to J.D. Power, in customer satisfaction for mortgage servicing. Like, this is the best. And if you go to rocketmortgage.com/techguy, you're going to really like it because it is an entirely online mortgage approval process. You do not have to go to the bank. You do not have to fill out a big paper form. You can just do this on your phone. On your phone? Wait a minute. That's impossible. Yes. Answer a few simple questions. They call it, it's a three-step process at rocketmortgage.com/techguy. They call it their power buying process. Step one. You answer a few simple questions, no big long application, and they'll check your credit. They'll show you the loans for which you qualify. You choose the term, the rate, the down payment. And there you got it, pre-qualified approval. After that, within 20, by the way, that first step, 10 minutes, tops. Then step two, they'll verify your income, your assets, and credit in less than 24 hours, and they'll give you verified approval. Now you get a letter you can give to the realtor, or better yet, to the seller that says, they got the loan. They're qualified. You are now, you got the strength of a cash buyer. That took less than a day. Now, the third part is already in there, built in. Once you're verified, you qualify for their all-new exclusive Rate Shield approval. They lock your rate up for up to 90 days while you shop. Rates are going to go up. I can almost promise. I mean, they have been. The Fed even says, we're going to raise rates some more. But your rate can't go up for 90 days while you shop. It can go down. Yeah, if the rates go down, your rate could go down, but it will not go up. So you have the peace of mind knowing this is what the loan's going to cost me, maybe even a little less. I love this. Rocketmortgage.com/techguy. This is exactly why. Number one in customer satisfaction, 9 years in a row. 9 years in a row, according to J.D. Power. Rate Shield approval is only valid on certain 30-year purchase transactions. Additional conditions or exclusions may apply based on Quicken Loans data in comparison to public data records. Equal housing lender, that's important. Licensed in all 50 states, that's good. And MLS, consumeraccess.org, number 33. Look, here's what you got to remember. Rocketmortgage.com/techguy. Do it right now. Thank you for their support. Well, hey, 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 how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Oh, yeah, time to talk computers, the internet, home theater. We got your digital photography. We got your smartphones. We got your smart watches, your augmented reality, all that jazz. 8888 Ask Leo. That's my phone number, 888-827-5536. Call me if you want to talk high tech. 8888 Ask Leo. Line one, Diane in Chicagoland. Hello, Diane.
Hi, Leo. How are you?
I am great. How are you?
More than wonderful. Getting better and better.
Oh, I love talking to you, Diane. You always make me smile. What can I do for you today?
Okay, I have a Note 9 unlocked 512 gigs.
I remember that. Yes, you love your Note 9 like a man, I think you said.
That's right. It was the Note 3 that I loved, and I had to wait this long to update.
So you just got your new 9.
Yes.
How exciting.
But you remembered that I loved the 3 like a man.
I do remember that. That's one of those things you just don't forget.
That's right. So now I'm loving the 9 even more.
Oh.
Okay. My question is, the man at Best Buy, and I didn't get the 9 there, suggested that I have a Dex Pad.
Oh, yeah. I have the Dex. So Samsung had this crazy idea, crazy, that if this phone is so powerful, which it is, right? Our smartphones today are supercomputers in our pocket. Why would you buy a laptop or another computer? All you really need is a little docking station. That's their Dex, D-E-X. The Note sits in the Dex, and then the Dex is connected to a full monitor, you know, a 27-inch display or whatever size you want, but it can go pretty big, keyboard and mouse. So you get home, you dock your phone, and then a special version of Android pops up on the screen, and it looks more like a desktop operating system. And Samsung provides a number of apps that will operate in that environment. And the idea is, well, you know, you got your word processing and all the stuff you need to do in your phone, and you're carrying your phone around, so why should you get a separate computer? You'd have to copy the data over and stuff like that. Make it your one all-in-one computer.
So,
is that what we're talking about? Now, wait a minute. Somebody in the chat room is saying, oh, the DexPad is something different. Is that a touchpad?
No, the DexPad is. It's about the size of a playing card or the length of your hand. It is not the circular one.
They've confused me by reusing the name Dex. All right, so this has a little fan. You dock your phone. Oh, it still connects, though, to a computer, right? Yeah, no, it's the same idea. And then you use, I get it. You use the phone as a touchpad.
Well, Leo, this one is rectangular, the length of your hand.
I'm looking at it. Yeah,
it's called a Dex Pad.
Yeah, so it replaces the circular Dex. It's the same idea, though. It turns your phone into a desktop computer.
What's your opinion?
Do you have a regular computer?
Now, that I want to talk to you about also. I was thinking of getting an Intel NUC.
NUC, yeah.
NUC.
Yeah, NUC, yeah. So
I was going to get a solid-state drive because it's just a little box.
Yeah. And this is, you know, it'd be the same kind of thing where you'd connect it up to a computer, a mouse, keyboard, and monitor, and it would turn into a computer. It is a computer, though. It's a Windows computer, and that's the big difference. See, the nice thing about the DexPad, you already spent $1,000 on your Note 9. You already have the computing stuff, the memory, the storage. So for $70, you get the DexPad, and that turns it into a desktop computer. But I have to point out, it's not a Windows machine. It's not a Mac. It's not even a Chromebook. It's kind of this oddball thing that Samsung has created. What do you do with a computer?
I do a lot of searching, and I create documents. And I use LibreOffice.
Yeah, so you couldn't use LibreOffice on the Dex. You could use it on a NUC. It's an open source free version of Microsoft Office. Quite good. I like LibreOffice. But the Dex you'd use, but you wouldn't maybe need it because the Dex comes with a word processor, you know, from Samsung. I mean, it has these special, and you need to because a normal program, even an Android program, isn't going to really work right in this new form factor. So Samsung, to make this work, had to create their own software, basically. You know, it's going to be cheaper. It's only $70.
Right.
So it's going to give you a chance, and you could use it, by the way, with a remote access program like our own sponsor, Remote PC, to access a Windows machine. So it could be like a Windows machine, be a little slower. I guess the best thing I could recommend is if the guy at the store had the Dex, try it. See what because you have to see what the operating system looks like, what the programs look like. It's not like anything you've ever seen before. It's kind of a specialized version. It's neither Android nor anything else. You can run Android apps, but really the whole idea of it is to run these specialized Samsung apps. They have an email program. They have a word processor. It might be everything you need. What are the documents just like word processing documents?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, it might be everything you need. The advantage, the whole reason you do this, A, to save money. You already spent money on a phone. But B, you're carrying your computer with you at all times. Now, you probably, the Dex isn't too big. The Dex pad isn't too big. You could carry that in your purse as well. So you could even have but you still need to find a computer, monitor, keyboard, and mouse to plug it into. So
exactly.
Yeah. I mean, if you had one at work and you had one at home, you know, you had a spare, and a lot of offices have spare monitors, keyboards, and mice. You could do that. You could go back and forth, and you'd have all your data with you all the time. I was a little underwhelmed by the software package, but it doesn't sound like you need anything super fancy. And this probably would do the things you want to do, which is surf, email, and create word processing documents.
I'll check it out.
I'd hate to say go get it. Oh yeah, it's great. I would say go to the store and play with it so you can see if you can live with the software. I have it. I never used it again. Now, I got the original circular Dex, not the new Dex pad. But the only difference with the Dex pad is it's a touch. You can use the phone as a touch pad, a trackpad for the computer, which actually is pretty nice.
Okay, so what's your opinion of the Intel NUC?
It's just a Windows PC in a small form factor. It's just another computer. Nothing special. They can be pricey. I'd be cautious. I would compare it to a laptop, say a Dell or a HP laptop, because the NUC still requires monitor, keyboard, and mouse, whereas a laptop does not. And I think you can get laptops for less than a NUC. NUC is just like Apple's Mac Mini. It's a little small. NUC stands for New Unit of Computing. And there are other companies that make NUC-like devices. Lenovo makes a ThinkCenter, which is very similar. So you don't have to get specifically the Intel NUC. There are a lot of companies that make NUC-like computers. Look on Newegg.com if you want to see a range of computers like that. There's a whole bunch of them.
Okay.
Dell makes one.
I just love you. And I'm so glad that you're there. I heard the man say 20 years ago he was surprised to find you. Don't ever leave.
I'm never leaving. They're going to have to carry me out in a pine box. One day I'll be in mid-sentence. I'll say, this new Windows 25, it's okay, but I'm not a... and that'll be it. Thank you, Diane. It's really great to talk to you. Always a pleasure.
Thank you so much.
Have a wonderful day. Take care.
All right, you too. Bye-bye.
Oh, I love talking to Diane. She's great. She told me she loved her Note 3 like a man. Yikes! 8888 Ask Leo website, techguylabs.com. More to come in just a bit. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo. Mm-mm-mm. Oh, this is interesting. Are these third-party? I think they are. Third-party DEXs. DEXi. So we were talking about the little dock that Samsung made available for its Samsung Note and S9, the DEX station. And I see a company called NexJack, NexJack. Somebody in the chat room says he's getting this for a gift. It's only $30, so it's less than Samsung's. And it's just basically a Type-C connector. So it plugs into the bottom of the Note 9. I wonder if all the same stuff happens as happens on a DeX. I guess it's not proprietary. Let's see. I ordered this Galaxy S9 Plus as an alternative to buying DeX station, which is more expensive, says one Amazon reviewer. After connecting it to my phone and monitor, it immediately recognized the phone, asking if I wanted to proceed to mirror it on the screen or go into full DeX mode. So Samsung says, oh, you're a DeX. Good. So it works. 4K desktop not yet supported by DeX. Biggest resolution is plenty, by the way, 2560 by 1440. So you can use it on a 4K monitor. I think that sounds pretty nice. Now I have to order one of these and try it. That's what I'm going to do right now. I'll give you a report next week. Because that's $30. At that price, why not? Why not just get it and have it, carry it around, fit it in your pocket? It's just a little dongle. It's just a little dongle. Greg in the Ozarks. You're next, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Greg.
Hey, Leo. Got a strange problem for you.
Okay, I love strange problems.
Well, I've got a Samsung TV. It says, when I turn it on, it says smart TV, which I got no idea what that means.
Well, it ain't that smart, let's put it that way. But it's a TV that can connect to the internet and has internet-style applications like Netflix.
I don't do that, but I got a Toshiba VCR-DVD combo. It only plays in black and white. And I have checked. I had somebody come out and look at it. Well, everything's hooked up right. So what's your idea on that one?
So the Toshiba DVD
VR
combo
has
what kind of connector to connect it to the TV?
The regular ones, the red, blue, yellow, white, you know, whatever.
Okay, so there's three different, actually four different kinds it could be. There's red, white, and yellow.
Yeah.
That's almost always what I'd expect from a VCR.
Right.
Because that's analog. So red and white are left and right music, and yellow is composite video.
Okay.
And I would guess that cable's bad, so the first thing I'd do is go get a new one. Is there any other connectors on the back? Because there are better quality. S-Video, for instance, is better.
There's one that's kind of a kingpin thing. You hook it in my VCR console.
I think that's the S-Video, but I might be wrong. But it looks it's
the back of this machine.
Oh, it doesn't. Okay. The back of the machine only has the red, yellow, white things. That's it.
Right.
All right. Well, that's the one that's got to work. I would say, you know, they're 15 cents. If there were a Radio Shack in the Ozarks, I'd send you there.
Yeah, there might be one around somewhere.
I think they went out of business, but yeah, somebody bought them, and there might be. That's all you need. You could probably go to a Target or a Walmart. They'll have it. And just say, I need a composite video cable.
It was brand new.
Well.
I don't understand.
Well. Make sure you're plugging it into the red, white, and yellow. There's no blue. There's no green. There's no other colors. Just red, white, and yellow. Make sure you plug it into the right, you know, matching the colors.
It is.
Yeah.
It is. And she just plays in black and white. Plays good, but it just plays black and white.
That's bizarre.
I thought you'd enjoy that one.
Yeah, that's bizarre. I have to say.
It works good.
Make sure there's no blue on that, okay? If there is, then you need to get a different set of cables that are called component cables.
There's no blue.
No blue, no green.
Nope.
Just red, white, and yellow.
This thing's 5 years old. It was 5 years before I used it.
Yeah.
And then it only played in black and white.
Yeah, most analog devices, that's all they can do is composite out. That contains the video signal, and it's supposed to contain color information as well. But yeah, so if the cable's bad, that could be one thing. But it also could be, if you've got a, you know, I mean, I would try another cable before I'd give up on it. But it also could be there's something wrong with the player itself.
Or the operator.
I doubt the operator. I doubt that. You get now on that TV, can you see stuff in color and other stuff?
Yeah.
It's just when you hook it up to that device.
Right. A guy brought down just a DVD player.
Oh, here we go. Look at this. Our chat room has figured this out. Look at this. Scooter X in our chat room is quoting something. Check the menu of the DVD player. Because if... So you're going to want to make sure that both the TV, actually, I think I would check the TV, and because the TV may use the same jacks for the red, white, yellow that it does for the yellow, green, blue, in which case you will get, and I'm reading it, I'm quoting it, if the TV is set to composite, you'll get a black and white picture. So maybe if you go in the settings and make sure that the jacks are correctly set. This is a little confusing because what you want is composite. You're doing composite video.
All right.
So make sure that the settings on the both the DVD player and the TV are for composite, not component. I know that's confusing.
So there's a menu for this.
There might be. It's worth looking.
I mean, for the TV or the DVD?
The DVD will also have a menu, but it'll show up on the TV because you don't have a screen on the DVD player. Do you have a remote control for the DVD player?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah, look and see if there's a menu button or an options button or something like that on there.
It's 5 years. I couldn't be able to figure this out.
It's been black and white for 5 years, and you're calling me now?
Well, yeah. Well, I haven't used it for 5 years.
Samsung TVs do have that setting as well. I will put a link to the Tom's Guide article that Scooter X is providing me. I keep getting a black and white picture, even though I connected it the right way for my player with a composite connection, and I have a Samsung shared component capsule. You need to switch the TV's component composite connection to component. I don't think that's right, but try it. Try switching it. And that should fix it. I'll put a link to all of this at techguylabs.com. That's weird. It's confusing because It says you should switch it to component, which would be wrong. You're putting red, white, and yellow as composite. But you might try switching it to component because that's what this says. Yeah, that's what the problem, because when I chose component, it always displays black and white. Oh, yeah, yeah. Switch it to composite. And then the other thing is try unplugging the blue component adapter and then switch the source to AV. Oh, we're going to put this link in the show notes to Tom's guide. This Tom's guide thread is crazy. Have you found the solution to this? I encountered the same problem. Sometimes it was playing in color. Sometimes not. That's the solution. For anyone still looking for a solution on a Samsung Smart TV, try unplugging the blue component adapter. And then you should be able to switch the source in the TV menu to AV. Crazy. Crazy. I'm serious. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888 Ask Leo, the phone number. Woo! Thank you, Big Pee-wee, our musical director. He's perking me up here. Ed on the line from Claremore, Oklahoma. Oh, before we go to Ed, I just want to read this weird thing for our last caller. And thanks, Scooter X, in our chat room, because he found it. And apparently, with Samsung Smart TVs, they have a little module, the component module that you would plug these cables into, but the TV can be confused about what kind of signal it's getting from the VCR. We know, because it's red, white, and yellow, that it's the composite signal, but the TV might think it's a component signal. So this is the magic trick I would have never guessed. But this comes from Tom's Hardware Guide, and we'll put this in our show notes at techguylabs.com. Unplug the blue cable. It's like defusing a bomb. Not the red cable. Do not cut the red cable. Unplug the blue cable from the component box in the back of your TV. Then you should, with the remote on the TV, be able to go to AV as the source. And the TV will go, oh, I get it. It's a composite input. And all will be well. It'll be in color. How about that? Now, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to put you on hold there. Welcome, Ed, from Claremore, Oklahoma.
That's okay, Leo. That was an interesting one.
It was, wasn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. Thanks a lot. You've taught me a whole lot over the last few years, so I'm hoping you can teach me a little bit more now.
All righty.
Just as I called in, your screener talked to me, and then when she put me on to listen to the radio there, you were just finishing up a conversation that may have covered the same ground I'm going to ask about.
Oh, I doubt it. Oh, I doubt it. And even if it did, if you're asking, it means other people want to know, too. So go ahead.
There may be a few more things. A few weeks ago, you were discussing it, just commenting that you wondered why people bought iPhones when there's so many good Androids for less than half the price. And my first thought has always been, ever since I got an iPhone and watching all the news reports, every time there's a malware problem with a phone, it's an Android.
Well, that's true. There have been many. No, yeah. You may not hear about them. Maybe the local news doesn't report on it, but there are many issues with Apple iPhones as well, unfortunately. However,
I was wondering,
in both cases, you don't run into them. They're very rare. I've never met anybody with a malware infection on either Android or iOS, unless they did something really dumb like jailbreak it.
All right. That's what you were saying. So I was getting that from the last part of that conversation, and I'll go back and look at the show notes later about what you all
I mean, you can. Here's right. the here's the strong case you can make for the iPhone. It probably is marginally more secure because Apple's very careful about what gets into the iPhone store. Google's a little bit less careful, but it's marginal. The real benefit iPhones offer is privacy, because Apple's business is selling you the iPhone. Google's business is selling your data to advertisers.
Right, right.
And that really should tell you everything you need to know. You're more private on an iPhone.
Let me ask you this. Just a couple of days ago, I heard a report about what is most targeted by malware writers.
iPhones.
And it was like...
You know why?
Yeah.
Because those people got money.
Well, it might have just been operating systems for desktops.
Well, desktops, it's definitely Windows.
Androids, yeah.
Yeah, I'll tell you.
40-some percent.
Yeah, no, that's bogus. No one knows. Nobody knows what's targeted or not targeted. I'll tell you the truth. If you're a bad guy, there's a couple of things you think about. Of course, whether the target's soft is a big one. But honestly, most bad guys are nitwits. That's why they're bad guys. They're idiots. They're doofuses. They're dumbos. They are not pursuing a right lifestyle. And they're going to get caught. So they're stupid. But they're using, in almost every case, software they didn't write. They didn't invent. There's what we call script kiddies. They're using other people's scripts. So the very number one thing is, well, where can I get a script? And you know, how easy it is for me to find and how cheap is it for me to get this script that I'm going to use to infect people? That's number one. Number two, the number of targets. And the reason Windows is completely number one in terms of viruses, rather, is because there are, you know, there are 95% of all operating systems are Windows. You'd say the same thing for Android. In the U.S., it's about 50-50. But globally, Android has 80% of the market. So that's why you're going to go after those guys. There's more targets. It's a target-rich environment. So, right. And then the third reason that people might go after iPhones is because, well, people with iPhones clearly have disposable income because they're expensive.
So do you think I can comfortably walk into, if I'm careful, the Android world?
Yeah. I've, again, never seen anybody get any malware. The key is not to do dumb things. Get reputable apps. You're not going to download an app called Fire Engine 3000, the best fire engine wallpapers of all time from Russia. You're not going to do that. You're not going to get a Chinese program that says make money by running this program on your phone. You're not going to do that. You're going to get normal apps, Facebook. You're going to get, right? You're going to use a Chrome browser. So you're going to, in most cases, be completely safe. It's people who kind of venture into the dark corners of the internet that get more in trouble. And frankly, you're much more, if you really want to pick your number one risk, it's a Windows machine, period. Do you use a Windows machine?
No, I've got a Mac at home.
Good man.
I've gone all Apple, but I would say, a bunch of money doing it.
I would say the reason to use Apple is because you like it. That's the best reason. If you know, use what you like.
Well, I like to save money.
Well, that's not Apple.
No.
It ain't the low-priced leader, is it?
No.
I think you could make a case that with Apple, the gear is so well made it might last longer. So if you don't buy a new iPhone every so divide that $700 you spent by 8 years and it didn't cost you all that much money.
Right.
Your cell phone bill is almost invariably larger than your phone costs per year, right? There's a whole nother one. Most people spend well over $1,000 a year on their cell phone bill. And over if you keep a phone for a couple of years, that's $2,000. That's twice what your phone costs.
Right. Okay.
Well, hey, those are great questions. I'm glad you asked. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks a bunch.
All right, Ed. Take care. Yeah, I think there's a lot of fine parsing of things in the tech world that really aren't that different. They're slightly, you know, you could very finely parse out. Well, the iPhone is this, and the Android is this, and Windows does that. But honestly, their differences aren't so great that you shouldn't choose what you feel most comfortable with, what you like. And if part of that decision is, well, where do I feel safer or where do I feel more private? That's fine. Those are appropriate criteria. I mean, you can easily say, well, Apple is more private because their business is selling hardware. But don't forget, Apple tried and failed to create an iAds platform that would have done exactly what Google does with your information. The only reason they don't do it is because it flopped. Nobody wanted it. People prefer Google and Facebook. So, you know, is Apple virtuous by choice or by chance? By circumstance? I don't know. Companies are companies. It's really important to understand. They're there to make money, to be profit-making industries. And it's good marketing to pretend you care about your customers and, oh, we're going to protect your privacy. It's good marketing. But in most cases, it's just marketing. You shouldn't assume any company is looking out for your best interest. They're looking out for your dollar and getting it in their pocket. That's their job. That's their job. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's my job, to answer those questions and talk to you about tech. We got one more segment before the show ends. So if you're on the line, hang on the line. I'll get you right after this. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number. Having a good time today with Big P. We are musical director Kim Schaffer. She's the phone angel in a Russian hat. Got the Gap Band playing in the background, a little Earth, Wind, and Fire in the foreground.
Sure, dancing in the Russian hat.
Oh,
is,
we are
quite
just
a sight.
We are dancing up a storm. Let me tell you. Whoo, yeah. 8888-ASK-LEO. Actually, just save that for next week because we're almost out of time here. I can't believe how fast the time goes when you're dancing. Let's go to line three. Bruce, Carlsbad, California. Hello, Bruce.
Hello.
What can I do for you today?
Yeah. Okay. Hey.
Ooh.
Yeah, one of your earlier caller about the Radio Shack cable converter.
Yes.
They're selling various Radio Shack products under Amazon now.
Are they really? Who owns them, though? I mean, Radio Shack went belly up.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, it used to be Tandy, I think, owned it. But yeah, they're
Tandy. Gone. Yeah, remember that? Tandy Radio Shack. I love their slogan. It's not real, it's realistic.
Yeah, well, anyway, you can still get the adapter cables.
Somebody licensed, I'm sure somebody licensed the name from the bankruptcy court.
Well, actually, I bought a HDMI to a component, if you will, cable converter about a year ago, and it actually came in the Radio Shack package.
Isn't that cool? Maybe they sold, I mean, of course, they probably had a lot of inventory they would have sold off too, right? So maybe somebody snapped that up and is still selling it on Amazon. That would be good.
Yeah, until the packaging is gone, and then maybe they'll just repackage it under some other.
I just want to know what's going to happen to all my points in the battery club. In all seriousness, it's a shame because that was the place you could go to get all that stuff. I guess,
well,
like a lot of retailers, people are just buying online now, and I see retailers going belly up all over the place. It's too bad.
But the hardcore still go to Fry's.
If you're lucky enough to have a Fry's where you live, you're golden.
All over the place in Southern California.
Yeah.
Two of them in San Diego alone.
Your best computer buys are always.
Yeah. The reason I was calling is I've got a very long, narrow house, and so I have Wi-Fi coverage problems in it. And I do not want to use extenders, and I don't want to use dual routers and Cascade. So what my question would be then, take with my router, I'm a good, really good TP-Link dual band router. I'm just going to. Okay, oh. I was going to turn the antennas off.
Yeah, turn them off.
Yeah, turn them off, and I'm going to put it in my enclosure in the closet.
Yep.
And just what I wanted to do then is be able to feed the router outputs. You know, the Cat five out.
Yeah.
And send those the cable to the extremes of the house.
Yeah.
And is there such a product that will just take that Cat 5 router out and just convert it to a Wi-Fi signal? It's an end product box. Nothing more.
From TP-Link, as a matter of fact.
Really?
Yeah. So here's a couple of things you might want to look at before you run Cat 5 in the walls. I wouldn't even do Cat 5 these days.
No, it's already there.
Oh, you already got it. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
You're golden. Absolutely. So there are lots of products that will do this. You got a router. That's that TP-Link. So let it do the routing. And really, any Wi-Fi access point will work. You just turn it, put it in bridge mode. You say, I don't want you to route. I just want you to be a radio. So, but TP-Link makes plenty of them. They may even make them without routing, but you don't have to avoid routing. You could just use
it
as radio.
It'd be cheaper.
Maybe it'll be cheaper, yeah. So TP-Link, I've used their power line adapters. They plug into the wall. You could plug the Ethernet into them, and they're just basically Wi-Fi access points. You bet. That's what you want. You want a plain Wi-Fi access point, not a router. You already have the router. Okay? And TP-Link has a broad variety of stuff just like that. In fact, I can't give you the part number, but I'm pretty sure, yes, actually I can, thanks to John in Florida, the EAP-225 access points. This is one of the things TP-Link does really, really well, believe it or not. Steve is the last caller of the day from Grand Rapids, Michigan. Hello, Steve.
Hey, how you doing, Leo?
I'm great. How are you?
Not too bad today, thank you. I'm in my vehicle driving, but I've had something that's been pestering me. I purchased the Epson EcoTank 4750 to replace an outrageously priced Hewlett-Packard as far as their ink goes.
You got the EcoTank, which we recommended. I have a 4750 at home as well. And the nice thing about that is not cartridge printing. It's an inkjet, but it has big old tanks, so they last you a couple of years. Yeah, I love that.
I love the printer when I can print. Now, this is the problem that I have. When I send a print job to it on a wireless network, it only prints about 10% of the time that I send something to it. The rest of the time, the print job gets stuck in the queue, and it never goes anywhere.
Yeah, that's not the printer. That's your computer.
So...
by the way, the worst problems in the world. When you ask an IT guy, what questions do you hate to hear? It's the printer won't work, it's this print queue thing. Go ahead.
It's sitting in exactly the same spot as the HP was, and the HP printed every time.
Right, because it's a different print queue. So the issue is that in order for printers to work nowadays, used to be, I don't know if you remember the old days, but the printer would have so much memory, you'd just send the job to the printer and it would spool it out. But that was an expensive way to make a printer. Nowadays, they put less memory in the printer and they spool the program the print job out from the computer. That's what you're creating. Okay. That's why you see that print queue. It's sometimes called a printer spool. And you're seeing and you can even see it on the screen. Okay, printing page one, because it's spooling it out, printing page two to the printer. If it's not printing at all, it's almost certainly a driver problem if it prints once in a while. And so that's why it's working the H. It's not a wireless problem. That's why the HP is working. It's not that it can't see it, that it can't connect to it. It's that there's something wrong with the driver. And it's always tricky, to be honest with you. I would suggest uninstalling and reinstalling. First thing, of course, is delete the job. Then uninstall the print driver and the print spool. I always get the latest drivers from Epson's site. They're very good about keeping those up to date. And often that will fix it. It's probably not a network problem as it could be. I'm not saying it's absolutely not. It could even be a printer problem. But it's almost certainly, when I see these problems, almost certainly an issue with the driver and the print queue. This is just a bad system, to be honest with you, but it's how all Windows machines print nowadays.
Sure. I did uninstall and reinstall about a week ago, and it worked great for the first two things that I sent.
and then when something's going on, Windows is junking it up. Darn it. That confirms the thought that it's software. Make sure you don't use the software that comes with the printer. Those are always out of date. Go to Epson's site. And get the latest one. And by the way, they have very good support. I should have mentioned right up front, they're a sponsor. They have very good support, so it might be worth a call to them, too. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Shoot, I ran out of time there. So you did do that. That's good. And it did work for a couple of jobs, and then it stopped again.
Yeah, and then it just sits there in the queue again and never gets any farther, and it's like...
Well, I'd also remove the printer from the settings and reinstall it.
Okay.
In fact, probably the best way to do this is to go back to zero, which is uninstall the driver, uninstall the print queue, remove the printer from your settings, and then start from scratch, letting it download the settings from the printer over the network and then whatever else it tells you to do.
Okay.
The other thing you can sometimes do that is kind of a black diamond tip, and this is what Epson support might try with you as well, is giving that printer a static IP address. Remember that the way internet addresses are assigned or network addresses are assigned is your router does that and sometimes changes them periodically. Yep. So if you give your a printer a static address, you'll need to use that. You probably need to use that static address when you set the printer up on your computer. That may also solve it. Sometimes the rotating addresses can sometimes confuse.
Right, the floating IP doesn't.
Yep. Yep.
Okay.
So that's a more advanced tip. Those. But if you're comfortable, it sounds like you understand what I'm saying. If you're comfortable doing that, that often works too. Remember though, when you do that, ideally you'd go into the router and reserve that, so that the router doesn't then assign it to anything else. Otherwise, you'll get an address conflict, and that's even a bigger problem. So if you assign it to something, give it a number that nothing has, 192.168.300 or whatever, and then reserve it in your router so that nobody else will get that.
Okay.
All right.
Super. I will try that.
Give that a try. I know I've had this problem. I know how frustrating it is.
Yeah.
I've had it.
I can usually
times.
Deal with it, but it's more frustrating when my wife tries to send something
exactly.
to the printer. And
exactly. It's the spousal problem. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Absolutely.
All right. Have a great day.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for calling. Have a good one. Bye-bye. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy Show for today. Thank you so much for being here. And don't forget, TWIT, T-W-I-T. It stands for This Week in Tech, and you'll find it at twit.tv, including the podcasts for this show. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPads, iPhones, Apple Watches on iOS Today, security on Security Now. I mean, I can go on and on and on. And, of course, the big show every Sunday afternoon, This Week in Tech. You'll find it all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next week with another great Tech Guy show. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next time.